Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering the return of the Kingston Climate Summit.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m. Or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. The Kingston Climate Summit is returning this summer, bigger and more ambitious than its inaugural year. Presented by Sustainable Kingston, ICLEI Canada, and the city, last year's event brought together community members for a full day of panels, workshops, and conversations focused on local climate solutions. Now, organizers are building on that momentum. The 2026 summit expands to a two-day event. This year's summit, themed Shaping Our Future Together, will take place June 3rd and 4th at St. Lawrence College. Julia Stroud, Executive Director of Sustainable Kingston, sat down with CFRC to share what's in store. Well, to start us off, the summit is expanding to 2 days in only its second year. I was wondering if you could speak to what came out of that first event that made you go, we've got something here that we need to build on.
Yeah, so we had a fabulous time last year. And I will add that actually it was just a week before I started in this role, but I was able to attend as a community member. And it was just this fascinating mix of people coming together who are working in the field as well as interested community members. And it was a mix of speakers and workshops and tours. And so we've been able to add an extra half day. So that will expand the speaker section. But we're also going to have the tours again. Last year, the tours were focused on getting active with transportation, food farming and forests, and climate action across Kingston. So we're still working on the themes for this year, but they were a lot of fun last year. And so I know a few people have already said that they're really excited that it'll be offered again.
Awesome. And you mentioned there's going to be some more room for speakers this year. I was wondering if you could expand upon what this expansion makes room for in terms of both the programming and the overall experience.
So with expanding the speakers, we'll just have a little bit more room to delve into a few subject areas. So the overall theme for the summit this year is biodiversity. So that you might have started noticing that everywhere. That seems to be the theme across Canada and a lot of other countries as well. And so we'll delve into that in a couple of areas, both within the speakers and also within the workshops themselves.
Awesome. And how are we kind of building on this momentum from last year?
Well, I mean, that event last year came together quite quickly and it had great attendance. And so I think we'll expand a little bit more into other parts of Kingston, but also the region as well.
And the theme is Shaping Our Future Together. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to what that means for Kingston right now and why it's so important for community members to get involved in this conversation.
Yeah, I think it's particularly important because, as I mentioned, the theme that's emerging is biodiversity. And biodiversity is not only really important because that's what we're finding is, you know, it can reduce species loss. It can also be a sink for emissions. But it's also, it's visible, it's fun. Right? It's something you can do on your own property or your business. It's something you can see. And so I think that's quite exciting because a lot of climate action can be, quite frankly, a little bit sad. You know, it's always the things are getting worse, things are getting worse. Well, biodiversity is actually really hopeful. All the other work is also super important, but biodiversity is something that people can actively do and every little bit counts. And so it's quite an exciting area to be expanding into.
Again, you mentioned there, we're talking about biodiversity this year. What are some of the biggest climate priorities and challenges facing Kingston that we may see addressed in the programming this year?
Yeah, so Kingston has actually started on its biodiversity action plan. And so that is a process that will take a number of months. but obviously highly relevant here. It also just finalized its adaptation and resilience plan. So that came out a month ago, and so that's available online for anybody to take a look. And so it'll be continuing those same themes, you know, how can we become more resilient as a community, which, again, everybody plays a part in that, both larger organizations, the government, as well as individuals.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could speak to a bit what the audience for this looked like last year and who you're hoping comes out this year.
Yes. So last year, it was a good mix of community members and people working in the field. So, you know, people in small nonprofits or Queen's University, the city itself. This year, we're hoping to see all those same people, plus a few more, really. I think it would be great to see people from lots of different fields, just because this is relevant for all of us. So it's partly just people working in the field, but also for other community members and other organizations to kind of see themselves in climate work, because we all can do something about it.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you had any goals this year. What will success look like for this year's summit?
I think success will look like expanded partnership. So that's the other aspect that we're delving into. So there's the Kingston Climate Partnership, which is new. It was announced at the last summit, and we'll be talking a little bit about what we've accomplished over the year, what we're working on. And if that grows and connections are made, you know, someone from one organization meets someone from a different organization, they realize they have something they can work on, I mean, that would be amazing.
Awesome. And no spoilers, but I was wondering if you could give us maybe some of the stuff that you've been working on since last year's summit.
So the partnership has come together. We've signed on quite a number of organizations and we've formed working groups. So there are four working groups within the partnership. There's buildings and energy, biodiversity, food, and integrated mobility. And we've started meeting as groups with the idea that really we will find projects to work on. So this is partly knowledge sharing, but also just an opportunity to seriously advance climate action in the community.
Awesome. And how can folks learn more about this year's summit and get involved?
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways. If you go on our website, which is sustainablekingston.com, there's the event page there, and also through the City of Kingston's page.
That was Julia Stroud, Executive Director of Sustainable Kingston, on this year's Kingston Climate Summit. Organizers say the full lineup, including keynote speakers, will be announced in the coming weeks. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story by Michelle Dory Forstel, LJR reporter for The Kingstonist, about a Kingston firefighter making waves at the Boston Marathon.
Thank you, Dinah. When Joseph Reed crossed the finish line at the Boston Marathon, the time on the clock wasn't what mattered to him. On Monday, April 20th, 21 years after his first run on the notoriously difficult course, the Kingston area firefighter returned with a different goal: to enjoy the experience, even if that meant running sideways, handing out thousands of high fives, and doing it all dressed as Gord Downie. Reed said his 2005 Boston Marathon debut, just his second ever marathon, quote, didn't go well. Reed stated that he wanted to make amends for that performance and, quote, go back and enjoy it this time. That attitude shaped his return from the outset. Reed qualified at the 2024 Toronto Waterfront Marathon for this year's Boston race, but arrived in Boston without a time goal. Instead, he leaned into the experience, one widely regarded as among the most prestigious and demanding marathons in the world. Known for its rolling hills and relentless elevation changes, the course winds through communities outside Boston before finishing downtown. Reed said runners are rarely given a break due to the rolling nature of the course, but what Boston lacks in flat terrain, it makes up for in atmosphere. With crowds lining nearly every stretch of the 42.2-kilometer route, Reed said the spectators ultimately dictated how he ran. That connection became the point. Rather than running the most efficient line, Reed zigzagged across the course, stopping to interact with spectators and sharing what he estimated were tens of thousands of high fives. He carried a Canadian flag in one hand and abandoned any conventional pacing strategy. He finished in 3 hours, 48 minutes, and 56 seconds, nearly an hour off his personal best, a difference that reflected his approach more than his ability. His outfit, inspired by Gord Downie's iconic look from the Tragically Hip's final concert in Kingston, ensured that he stood out. In Boston, though, that reference didn't always land. Quote, "Really early on, I realized I was Jaws and not Gord Downie," Reed said. Still, He added that there were worse things to be called. While many spectators didn't recognize the tribute, Reed said that the disconnect became part of the experience rather than a distraction. The costume dates back to 2017 when Reed first wore it at the Toronto Waterfront Marathon, just days after Downey's death, while raising money for the Gord Downey and Charlie Wenjack Fund. Reed noted that his outfit was more personal given the political tensions between the United States and Canada. Reed stated that his Downey-inspired look, quote, wasn't meant to be political, but rather a way to pay tribute to a well-known Kingstonian and introduce Americans to a Canadian icon. Channeling Downey's connection with the crowd, the eye contact, the intensity, the sense of presence, became central to how Reed approached the race. Reed, who grew up in Napanee and now lives in Kingston while working as a firefighter in Toronto, said running has long been part of how he stays fit for the job. But marathons, he admits, tend to start with something less structured. Looking back, Reed said it's not a single moment that stands out from this year's Boston Marathon, but the overall experience, the crowds, the connection, and the chance to return to the race on his own terms. And while he admits his first thought after crossing the finish line was that he might never do it again, he also knows better by now. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell of The Kingstonist for that story. Coming up, we have a story by Brenda Little from CJPE County Radio about a new contemporary art show in Prince Edward County.
The Annex building of the Royal Hotel in Prince Edward County was busy over the weekend, with the public excited to experience the Hotel Confidential Contemporary Art Show. Four rooms and accessible areas were transformed by 16 local and international artists with sculpture, music, textiles, and so much more, inspired by classic hotel-themed movies. Curators Stacey Spruill and Christina Zeidler tell us more about the exhibition.
Hotel in Toronto called the Gladstone Hotel, which still exists, mm-hmm. but my tenure is done there. But it had 365 days a year of art, but one of our signature shows was called Come Up to My Room. Hmm. And it was artists and designers collaborating in rooms on our second floor and really transforming the space. We did it for 17 years. And it's probably one of the most, I didn't realize this until doing this project, it's one of the most remembered things. And people yes. keep saying, oh, this is like this thing that used to happen in this hotel in Toronto. It's like, But one of the nice things is that that's just my history yes. and coming here. And this project is really a new collaboration. Yeah. And we had a different context here at the Royal of, we couldn't change these hotel rooms mm-hmm. there, and they're really of the Royal. So we looked for artists who had craft in their background, mm-hmm. and that doesn't mean just material craft, it's also their process, that they have a process to their work. And we carefully chose artists, hand-picked, and brought them into collaboration. And then conceptually, we gave them sort of as a backstory the idea that how hotels are represented on film. So we picked six films that could be jumping off points. So as a way to get everybody thinking conceptually mm-hmm. and willing to jump into the deep waters with us, because mm-hmm. it's quite a risk to say to somebody, they're here and they're so seamless that you think it's just they woke up one day and came up with this. Yeah. But really, it's a lot of risk. It's yeah. like ask somebody as saying, sing something. You know, it's like mm-hmm. To get them into dialogue with each yeah. other. And some of them, you don't see that reference whatsoever in the mm-hmm. work that's here. But the through thread with all of them is the idea of the hotel. What it means, and I think we've seen now just a myriad of different approaches.
Yeah, and especially looking at that like hotels on film, this like cinematic archetype of the hotel, and that's really mm-hmm. you know, if you've been through room 101, that's like apparent when you see these different mm-hmm. keys and sort of attaching them. So what I think is really interesting about the way that each of these artists approached it is that there is something cinematic about all of them, even if that reference is not obvious in a way. So even just kind of this like we keep using the word transgression or intimate, or, you know, this intimate nature of like coming into a hotel room, of feeling like, oh, am I allowed in this space? Like it creates like this really exciting atmosphere for people. There's kind of like, it feels illicit or secret, but not in a like, you know, overt way, in a more kind of like just fun way.
Right. Yeah, I think that also the other thing that the hotel space does, we're all familiar with a hotel, so it allows folks who might not be comfortable going to see conceptual art or contemporary art to enter into the space, because the invitation of a hotel is welcoming. Mm-hmm. So you're familiar with the space, even if you're not familiar with the art. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of the secret sauce.
Yeah.
And it brings you in, and then these artists' presentations are very human, because the artist is there with the work. So you can, it's the one art show where you can say, what is this about? And you're not being rude. You're just having a good conversation. And there's been lots of great, it's about dialogue.
We wanted something that was like that, that felt like everyone was welcome, that there was an entry point for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that there is also like an incredible depth and a consideration. Like, I keep calling it a layer cake of collaboration, mm-hmm. because that's what it feels like to me, that like it's just interwoven into
absolutely
everything, even
layered.
Yeah, even the audience interaction. Mm-hmm. I would say.
And this is I'm the part of the collaboration who I don't have an exact affiliation with anyone, so I'm sort of observing this amazing collaboration between a hotel and an arts council, mm-hmm. in a small town, mm-hmm. and this is really unique and incredible,
yeah.
and it's sort of emblematic of a small town, that you can kind of cross these what would be seen as silos or barriers,
yeah.
and do something sort of spectacular together.
Yeah, I feel like we can't state enough that like the collaboration between County Arts and the Royal.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Coming up next, we have Dinah Jansen reading a story by Keith Dempsey, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, about declining casino revenue payments in the township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands.
Thank you, Jesse. The Ontario Lottery and Gaming Corporation has issued fourth quarter gaming revenue payments of $185,356 each to the town of Gananoque and the township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands for hosting Shoreline's Casino Thousand Islands, continuing a downward trend in annual casino revenue for the two municipalities. The payments cover a period from January 1st to March 31st. For OLG's 2025-26 fiscal year, Gananoque and TLTI each received $873,544, down from approximately $938,000 in 2024-25. The latest payment also marks a decline from the previous quarter, when each municipality received $196,783 for the period October 1st to December 31st. Since Shoreline Casino Thousand Islands opened in June 2002, each municipality has received more than $34.4 million through OLG's municipal revenue sharing formula. While the payments remain a significant source of municipal income, annual revenue from the casino has steadily declined over the past decade. In the early 2010s, Gananoque and TLTI each received more than $1.8 million annually, more than double the current amount. Municipal officials have acknowledged that casino revenues are unlikely to return to those historical levels and have emphasized the need to reduce reliance on gaming revenue by diversifying income sources. The OLG said gaming hosting payments help municipalities fund community services and infrastructure projects. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Ted Evans, LJR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, with a story on new green initiatives in Lennox and Addington County.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
For Earth Day this year, Lenox and Addington County Council and staff have committed to conscious consumption practices going forward. This comes as an effort to take the environment into account, as is outlined in the county's Climate Action Plan. This year, the county decided on the theme of conscious consumption. Warden Nathan Townend talked about the 2026 theme.
This year's theme is conscious consumption. The 2026 theme aims to encourage citizens, municipalities, organizations, and businesses to commit to conscious practices, whether that's energy-related, material, digital, organizational, behavioral, or collective. This theme aligns with the County of Lenox and Addington's Climate Action Plan, which challenges us to take the environment into account in all of our decision-making. This commitment to conscious consumption by council and staff will help to maintain a strong, resilient, and responsible county community for years to come.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with CFRC's Sports Report.
Thank you, Dinah. The 2026 CFL Draft takes place tonight starting at 7 p.m. A launching point for Canadian collegiate players that are looking to make that jump into the pro ranks, this year's draft is heavy on top-tier NCAA talent. The projected top pick is Ottawa's Akeem Mezador, an overager defensive lineman from the University of Miami. Mezador played 3 years of high school football in Ontario before transferring to a school in Florida. Mezador would earn scholarship offers from a number of NCAA Division I programs before ultimately committing to West Virginia. After three strong seasons as a Mountaineer, Mezador would transfer to Miami, where he was a key player for the Hurricanes, who finished 2025 with a close loss to Indiana in the college football national title game. It is worth noting that Mezador is also projected to be a first-round NFL draft pick, which may discourage teams from selecting him in the early rounds of the CFL draft. There are six Queens Gaels who are eligible for selection in the CFL draft. Alex Vraken is rated as the draft's fifth best quarterback prospect. Scouts were impressed with his pocket mobility and arm talent, but he's not expected to be taken in the draft. It looks likely that Vraken will return to Queens in the fall for his fifth and final year of eligibility. H-back Liam Silverson scored a viral moment at the regional combine with an incredible one-handed catch, but some testing struggles will likely discourage teams from drafting him. Free safety John Korskaden attended the CFL regional combine in Waterloo, but his smaller frame and more cerebral skill set tend not to translate well in a physical testing environment, so it's unlikely he'll be drafted either. The three Gaels with the most buzz in the CFL draft are defensive lineman Stephen Capea, linebacker Justin Pace, and offensive lineman Nicholas Hennig. Capea turned heads with his regional combine performance at Waterloo. His measurables were so strong that they earned him a trip to Edmonton for the national combine. Though he is undersized for his position on the defensive line, Capea is immensely athletic with blinding speed and an impressive collection of pass rush moves. He is projected as a late round project player, but it's possible that he may go undrafted and try to earn a spot on a team with a training camp invite. Linebacker Justin Pace earned a national combine invite thanks to 3 years of impressive all-conference and all-Canadian caliber play. The Montreal native played his high school football in Florida before committing to Queens in 2021. Pace would likely go in the draft's later rounds if he's drafted at all. An inside source reported that Pace has been in discussions with the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Edmonton Elk in particular. He does plan on returning to Queens for his fifth year regardless of how the draft shakes out. No other prospect has risen the ranks as quickly as Queens offensive lineman Nicholas Hennig. An H-back turned tackle, Hennig has impressive physical measurables standing at an imposing 6'7" and weighing just under 300 pounds. He also boasts long, powerful arms and a shocking level of agility and overall athleticism for a man of his size. Hennig turned in an outstanding national combine, receiving a grade of 91.2 out of 100, by far the highest score of all the players who participated. He is projected to be the first U Sports player drafted, likely in the early to mid second round, but it would not surprise me to see him taken as a first round draft pick. Hennig has also received interest from a handful of NFL NFL teams, including the Arizona Cardinals. Nicholas Henning does have another year of U Sports eligibility, so it is possible that he returns to Queens in the fall for another year of seasoning. The CFL draft is scheduled to begin tonight at 7 p.m. on TSN.
And thank you to Jesse Bell for that update, and also to our sponsor. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn more about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell from CFRC with your Environment Canada weather report for the week. We begin with Tuesday, April 28th. Rainy day here in the city of Kingston. Daytime high of 12 degrees with an 84% chance of precipitation throughout the day, dropping down to 8 overnight. That 12 degree temperature point remains consistent heading into Wednesday, April 29th. This time, though, we have a 91% chance of precipitation, and it's going to be quite a heavy amount of rain as well. Going to feel closer to 11 degrees, so a little bit of humidity, but mostly a wet and somewhat chilly day here in the city of Kingston. Thursday, April 30th, daytime high of 10 degrees. Less chance of rain, but we are going to have cloudy conditions, and those 2 days of rain leading into it have certainly cooled things off heading into Friday, May 1st. New month, same weather, mix of sun and showers throughout the day, about a 64% chance of precipitation, daytime high of 9 degrees, dropping down to 2 overnight, and heading into the weekend, the first weekend of May, it's going to feel more like March. Daytime high of 6 degrees on Saturday, May 2nd, partly sunny and chilly with showers in the forecast. And Sunday, May 3rd, daytime high of 7, feeling closer to 4 with a 60% chance of precipitation. That remains consistent into the start of next week. Monday, May 4th, high of 9, 55% chance of precipitation. And then Tuesday, May 5th, the first nice day in the month of May. 13 degrees is your high, but it's going to feel a little bit warmer at around 15 with a mix of sun and cloud.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.